But sometimes they need to see something before they can follow through with that, kind of like pitch their clients.
Hi, everyone. Welcome and thank you for joining me. My name is Franco Vriano, and I'll be your host for the Tech Plus Art podcast. Tech Plus Art is the community for curious individuals and creators who are looking to make a dent in the universe. Together, we're exploring the new frontiers of creativity, humanity, and how emerging technologies will continue to shape our culture, professions, products, and much more. Join me on this journey as we speak with artists, makers, researchers, designers, and creators from all backgrounds and fields. Tech Plus Art is an inclusive community, and we make our content for you. So we want to hear from you. If you have any feedback, suggestions, topics you'd like us to explore or contribute to yourself, reach out to us on Twitter or via the website. You can check us out at maketechart.com or at maketechart everywhere else. So with that out of the way, let's get to today's episode. Today we're speaking with Emily Rosser, a creative developer at JM3, a design and experience agency that partners with forward-thinking brands to solve problems in the space between people and technology. Emily joins us to share her unique path into creative development and how she's bridging the gap between creative techniques, new technologies, and their commercialization for brands. Emily also explores strategies to both enhance a career in this industry and the role of collaboration in developing creative concepts. So let's dive in. Hey, Emily, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Franco. It's a pleasure to be on here.
Likewise, it's a pleasure to have a chance to catch up with you and to learn more about your work and what you're up to these days. But before we dive into all that, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Where are you from and what was it like growing up?
Of course. My name's Emily. I'm a 33-year-old creative developer originally from England. I currently work in Toronto. Creative coding wasn't something that I was initially kind of brought into, I guess. I kind of discovered it by myself when I was like 17. After I left school, I kind of went into carpentry because it was just I needed a job. And throughout that time, I discovered Flash and Maya. And after learning about that software, I was like really interested in making like very experimental kind of projects. And the more I got to learn about that software, the more kind of like creative ideas I had. And that eventually led me to quit carpentry and go back to full-time education. So I went to University of Wales in Newport and I did a foundation art diploma. And that kind of gave me a really nice insight into all the kind of areas within the kind of creative industry that I could go into. And obviously the area that caught my attention most was obviously digital media and just making like really nice artistic things with code. And that was kind of the path I followed from an early stage, I guess. That's what drew me to learn to code. I was just really interested in making art with it because I've always had a kind of strong artistic background. And to me, it was more fun making art than making a website. And that's kind of what pushed me through, I guess, until this point in my career.
No, hey, that's really cool. You don't usually hear about the crossover from carpentry into technology.
No, but I guess in some sort of way, it's still building, but just in a different format. You know, you still think you need to piece these things together to create, you know, the output that you have in mind. I guess it's just a completely different way of achieving that.
Yeah, absolutely. That totally makes sense. So you mentioned that you were drawn into creative coding at the age of 17. So what was it at that time that exposed you to this craft?
I used to attend a conference in England called Flash on the Beach. And obviously, as an aspiring creative coder, I used to see the likes of like Mario Klingman and Joshua Davis do these really exciting presentations. And seeing these guys at the top of their game making really cool stuff in Flash really inspired me. And I was just like, you know, I want to be on that stage. I want to be obviously showing people about all the cool stuff I make. And that was really good incentive for me to kind of like obviously study hard, obviously like invest a lot of my time into learning these kind of creative algorithms and just keep pushing myself, you know, and just obviously feeding back from other people to see what they do.
Very cool. And so what were some of the hardest challenges in terms of getting started? And beyond Flash, how has technology and your approach to building a career in this space continued to evolve?
Yeah, of course. Obviously, you know, I started to learn to code in Flash with ActionScript 2 and technology has changed a lot since then. Every time a new technology has come out, I've kind of obviously use the same algorithms that I've learned in the past. So like typically when I learn a new technology, I'll recreate a fractal in it because that will give me all the kind of key insights to that language or technology that I would need to achieve that end result. So for instance, when I started to learn Unity, the first thing I made was a fractal because that's exactly what I did when I learned WebGL. And I know the pattern, I know exactly what I want to achieve. It's just learning like a new piece of code or a new API. And hopefully, you know, like a week's time, I'll have achieved that result. And I guess because technology has evolved so fast, obviously, since Flash work kind of like faded away, we had to move all our skills to obviously the browser. So when WebGL came out, I was really excited about that because now I could do like real-time 3D graphics in the browser without a need for a plugin. And that to me was just, it was more accessible for everyone because no one needed a plugin. And it was just a way to kind of create more experimental stuff.
So how do you approach realizing creative coding projects? As an agency, is it based on specific client requirements or some of your own experiments, pitches, or a bit of both?
For sure. I guess, yeah, obviously once we get a project at work, you know, they kind of decide who's most suitable for it, and obviously based on our experiences. And I guess because I've researched a lot of generative art stuff and made a lot of it, I kind of usually have a good idea on the best way to approach it. So for instance, when I did all the research in fractals, that taught me how to build like generative 3D structures really fast. And obviously, any kind of like personal experiment you do in JavaScript, in like Python or whatever language, it always influences the work you do at work and vice versa, because you can apply that learning and you know of a really optimized way to achieve something. And obviously, when you get to do that work for a client, it's the best kind of fun because you're getting paid to do stuff you've obviously learned before and you also get to research new things. So I think it's like a constant cycle where you create really cool work at work and that influences your personal work and vice versa. And it's a nice feedback loop. You know, you're creating cool stuff and there's always something new you want to create after it as well.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And so since creative coding has been evolving since the Flash days, can you share how some of the projects you've tackled for customers have also evolved over time? What types of problems are you thinking about today? And how does creative coding tie back into the real world from a client or commercialization point of view?
When you deal with creative coding, you know, it's a different set of problems. Usually from building a website, usually you've got to deal with interaction in 3D space, like how the user would navigate that space, obviously certain algorithms for taking into the camera, for instance. Obviously, you need to figure out where the camera's pointing at. You need to figure out how to interact with like a physical object that's not there. There's a lot of spatial problem solving, and knowing how the user should navigate that space is really interesting. Clients usually have a variety of problems they need to solve. So if it's for like a project I'm currently working on, which is going to be in a physical space with people around, you need to be considerate of obviously the space the user has around them. And obviously when you're dealing with augmented reality or mixed reality kind of like experiences, you need to be constantly aware that obviously even though the user's looking at their phone, they need to be aware of their surroundings. So I think, for instance, in that case, it's useful to have the camera behind, so obviously the render, you know, so they can still see through their phone, in a sense. They still have a grounding. They're not totally disconnected from the world they're in. And obviously, you know, usability is really important in that kind of aspect. Luckily enough, there's been a lot of research on the best practices for augmented reality and virtual reality. And even though obviously we use a lot of the guidelines Apple and Google provide, it's still good to kind of make up a lot of or discover things yourself and see what works for you and for your end user. We do have a strategy department at work, and we're always using them to kind of like test the kind of prototypes we make and feedback on the things we're obviously developing, you know, because we wouldn't want to release something that's not usable and that we haven't really thought properly through the kind of like, you know, that project.
So what types of clients are we talking about? What kind of organizations have you been able to work with, both through Jam3 or previously?
So last year, I was working on a video game called East of the Rockies. It's probably one of the biggest interactive projects I've worked on today. It's a Unity augmented reality game, and it's about the Canadian-Japanese internment during World War II. That was a huge learning experience. Like, I had a little bit of Unity knowledge prior to developing that, but I spent like a good year and a half just working in Unity, and obviously that really brought me up to speed learning how to make a game inside a game engine compared to obviously traditional WebGL stuff. It's not just a game development, it's like, you know, how does a user interact with a game in the virtual world? You know, it's not something you kind of just figure out straight away. It's definitely a learning curve, and it's something you want to constantly improve over time. Client was the National Film Board. They obviously partner with us to help fund the project, because those kind of projects don't come around very often and usually they're self-initiated. So that was kind of fun to do something completely different from the usual commercial clients.
That's awesome. Are there any other unique engagements that maybe leverage new immersive technologies that you're able to talk about?
One of the most recent projects we did was a web AR experience for Adidas Beast. And the idea was, is inside Toronto, we have the streetcars, and users could use their Presto card to maybe like win a pair of shoes or like win a discount. And that was the first time we've kind of used the WebAR technology for like a commercial project. And it's nice to finally start to use like more like immersive technologies for clients, because they're kind of more willing to trust user engagement, obviously, with like the new technologies that are coming out. Whenever we get a chance to kind of use a technology like that, we'll always try and use it to our advantage and to kind of like boost the impression of the brand as well.
Wow, that's very impressive. And so how do you approach bridging that gap as an agency that's leveraging new technologies in creative and maybe unproven ways? How do you build trust that that is what's needed with the brand or client?
I think, you know, for them, we always try and say, you know, like if you use this technology, it could help elevate your brand, everyone else's impression, how you're kind of like utilizing new technologies. Obviously, we don't want to use technology for the sake of it if we think there's like a better way. Using something that's more stable and more well-known, we'll totally go down with that approach. But sometimes we'll do like mock-ups, or we'll do like quick prototypes, and we'll just try and prove the concept before they sign off on it, because sometimes it's really hard for them to visualize. And it doesn't take us a long time to quickly mock something up and kind of say, it'd be really cool if we did this. And maybe it's going to create more of an impact on the campaign if you could publicize it this way.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And so you've shared a lot about various technologies and approaches to experimentation and commercializing new ideas and experiences. But based on your experience, what's really missing out there? What would make you more creative or productive?
Technology is always changing rapidly. And for us, you know, we try and use what's appropriate. But with any new technology that comes out, there's always the learning curve. There's always time to learn it to its best ability before you feel confident enough to obviously use it on a project. So obviously an example with this was when we developed Use of the Rockies, we had the decision whether to use Unity or Unreal. But the developers in the office, including me, we had more experience of Unity versus Unreal. So kind of got to go with your gut instinct on whether you feel confident enough to use the technology for its right purpose. But I guess because there's so much technology out there, it can be overwhelming knowing what to use for the right project. I try and stay actively involved and obviously see what's been released and try it out before I can propose it to obviously the internal teams. But, you know, it's good to have a grasp on like what's new and what's exciting, because we always want to use the latest exciting technology. But, you know, we've got to know it's stable enough to pitch to a client.
Totally. And so how do you see elements of creative coding like generative art or physical installations driving the industry forward?
What I really like when I see obviously generative art and big installations is the user engagement, because people aren't used to seeing huge screens of art moving and stuff that reacts to their kind of body movement or obviously gestures. And I think to me, that's one of the most exciting fields of technology right now, is creating like reactive environments for people in public spaces and just obviously connecting them to technology more in a more subtle way, but making it so beautiful and seamless that it doesn't stick out like a sore thumb. I love seeing like big installation that really inspires me to kind of go into that field more. And I think obviously AI and art is to me the most exciting frontier of generative art right now, because I think we've covered as much as we can with traditional generative art. To me, that's like the next evolution of it. Seeing obviously what we can do with machines and vice versa. I think there's just a whole new field of undiscovered techniques and obviously algorithms that we can use at our disposal. And hopefully it makes art more connected and smart as well.
Well said. I totally agree. And I think it's going to be really exciting to see that evolution continue to take shape. And so with your career having started in the UK and then moving to Canada, what's the difference in culture between those two places in relation to the industry?
Ever since I graduated from university, I worked in London and I worked at High Res. I worked at Stink Studios. And obviously, I was at Stink before I moved to Toronto to start Jam Free. So I've been in the industry about 10 years now. And since I started, it's changed a lot. The culture is definitely different, I'd say, from London. Toronto is the most diverse place I've ever lived. It's just incredible. Like in London, obviously, you do have a diverse culture, but I feel Toronto is more friendly and people are more open to getting to know you as a person. In London, I was at the start of my transition, so obviously I felt that as a challenge and a barrier to try and get to know people. But obviously, since I moved to Toronto, I feel like I've just integrated more into society and I've really found myself. So that was definitely a lot easier for me. And it feels more like home than England does now. So it's definitely important to have like that good balance of work and life and making sure you feel comfortable and safe in whatever environment you're in. But yeah, Toronto honestly has been like an absolute dream to live in and work in. I couldn't be more grateful for how this has all turned out for me. And obviously coming to Jamfree was definitely the right decision.
That's awesome. So what's one piece of advice that you would share with a younger version of yourself or somebody who's just coming into this industry, either within the context of a service agency or just exploring what's out there? Anything to keep in mind?
For the younger generation, if you're definitely getting into generative art, find some people you look up to. Because for instance, when I mentioned when I used to go to these conferences, I would see work that I really liked and it would make me want to explore that kind of like path. And I think it's definitely important to have like a kind of like figure you see yourself looking up to and obviously hoping you achieve obviously some of the things they've achieved. Definitely pushing yourself. Creative coding is very hard, I guess, to kind of get into because it requires a lot of your personal time. And it's not something you can actively work on every day at work because it's such a niche skill set, I guess, to have. But definitely, you know, just immerse yourself in culture and art galleries, anything that's really rich in story and creativity. Definitely work with designers because they have such a good eye and hopefully they can influence the stuff you get to work on as well. And I think as a developer, you know, that is one of your strongest relationships at work, making sure you work closely with designers and motion designers and strategy, because it's not just like a solo job. You have to mix with people. You have to kind of feed off each other to create the best result. But yeah, I hope the younger generation of creative coders have enough at their disposal of technology to, you know, create anything they want to, because obviously when I was younger, there wasn't a lot of software that would allow us to do that. It was mainly just Flash or Shockwave and any other kind of like basic interactive environment.
So as we previously mentioned, you moved from the UK to Toronto to join a creative agency called Jam3. Can you tell us more about this shift and what Jam3 was all about?
Yes, obviously I left Stink and I started a new job at Jam3 in Toronto. Jam3 are known as obviously a design and experience agency. Ever since, obviously, I started working in London, I knew of them. I've always had a high opinion of them. And it was the first role I had as a creative developer. So I would be going into work full time, working on all the kind of experimental, the kind of like immersive kind of technologies. Since I started, it's been that every day. You know, I've never had a day where I've been doing something like boring or not interesting. It's been exciting every day for me. And I'm just coming up to my 2-year anniversary, actually. But yeah, obviously Jam3 are known. We do some really cool projects for Facebook, Google, some more luxury brands as well. We're always getting interesting and diverse projects. So it keeps me constantly interested, excited to come to work every day.
That's very cool. And so you mentioned that your day-to-day focus is really now on solving creative challenges. So what does that really look like for you within the context of a creative agency?
Typically, if I'm on a project, we'll have like a daily scrum in the morning. Obviously, everyone catch up to see what they're working on. I'm leading a team of people right now on this like new project, this little WebGL kind of experience, which is really cool. And obviously, I'll check in with those guys, obviously make sure they've got tasks for the day, make sure they know what they're working on, and some of the challenges we face. So for instance, the current project I'm working on, we need to create some really nice WebGL effects. So maybe it's creating like mist or creating like fog or creating some really beautiful interactions that represent objects in real life. And I guess that's always a nice challenge for a creative coder, you know, where you want to replicate something that's real, but also add some artistic direction to it as well. The coding obviously we use is mainly WebGL code for this kind of project and shader effects, but you need obviously a good understanding how objects would be lit in obviously reality, you know, so understanding how lighting models work is really important.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And so given your path through the agency world, how has your work or approach to creative coding evolved through the impact of that team-based project environment that you just described, you know, in terms of working with a creative director or designer?
Obviously, as a creative coder, you have a vision as well of what you want to achieve. But at the same time, obviously, designers have even greater artistic vision in some cases. And they are the ones that can magically put the finishing touches on things. So always through my collaboration at work with designers and obviously motion designers, I've always added the GUI controls. I basically create things, get them into a certain state where I think looks good. And then I'd sit down with a designer for like an hour or two and we'd just tweak numbers. We'd always find those like magic numbers from using sliders and we'd just see what feels and looks right. And I think their perspective on color and composition super important, because while we all like to kind of like have a good go at like making sure it like looks the best way possible, I think you always need that extra eye from someone else, because you can get so tunnel visioned into working on that project, you might not see it from a big picture. It's always good to feedback with others as well.
That's super cool. And so how complicated is it to integrate that feedback or those different perspectives back into the code and the final experience? Like, how flexible is it to merge these different disciplines in the real world?
I feel like it's generally okay. And you know from your instincts whether it's the right thing to do or not. Sometimes you have a strong opinion where you'd rather not do something because you think you'd impact the quality of the build. And maybe some things are just like too overkill to add. Like maybe the designer wants to add like a particle field and you think it's not really going to do much for the experience. But it's always like a discussion. You should never cancel down their idea, because if they brought an idea to you, it's definitely valid. It's just making sure you both work to a resolution, and it's got to be right for the idea in mind.
And so just pushing that a bit further for a moment, you mentioned earlier that sometimes work will stem from personal exploration or ideas. And so how do you approach building a prototype with some of those concepts, but also the perspective of colleagues? How do you know when an idea is ready to pitch?
Yeah, it's interesting you bring this up, because currently on the project I'm working on, we came across this exact problem. Our initial idea we wanted to pitch to the client was to use WebAR to visualize this project. And currently the only technology out that's capable of doing that doesn't run 60 frames a second. And for us, that would really impact the quality and obviously feel of the build. So I did two prototypes. I used one with WebAR technology and one with just a gyroscope, kind of like motion controls with video camera in the background. And whereas the WebAR is a lot more impressive as you can move through space, we didn't feel like it could execute the final vision, obviously, of what we had in mind for this brand. And this brand is a very luxury brand. Obviously, we needed to make sure the speed and the performance and the tactileness was there. So I created the prototypes. I presented it to the design and strategy team. And it was clear from that point on which technology we would choose. But sometimes they need to see something before they can follow through with that kind of like pitch the client. So yeah, we slightly adapted our approach, but it wasn't so drastically different from what we had in mind first.
Wow, that's super interesting. So I'm not sure if you're able to speak directly to this question from a professional sort of work perspective, but maybe from a more personal exploration side of things, you know, what's next? Are there any projects that you're looking forward to doing that you're able to share with us? You mentioned a little bit of WebAR and Unity, but what are some of the upcoming focuses for you?
It's been a while since I've worked on my personal art, and that's something I always used to enjoy doing. And I guess I've been so busy this year, just on my personal transition and other things that have come up in my life. I'd really like to go back to making art again, because that really does influence what I do at work. And maybe I'd love to do it using Unreal Engine next year, because I've been wanting to learn that for a while. I always use my personal projects as an excuse to use something new and hopefully create something really cool out of it. And hopefully if I spend like a year with that technology, I'll get to grips like I do with Unity. But yeah, definitely like machine learning and Unreal are my next objectives.
Very cool. And so you mentioned a few resources already throughout the course of this conversation, but are there other resources out there that you'd point out for folks?
You want to start with the least friction when you learn to code. So like, you know, processing is always a popular example. There's a guy called Daniel Schiffman. He does a really cool YouTube series called The Coding Train. Like, to me, that's such a powerful resource for the younger generation, because he goes through all the basics. He's teaching code, but in a fun way. If you're interested in learning to code, I think that's probably the route I would have took, you know, if I was that young again, if I was starting now. But otherwise, there's obviously other technologies like Paper.js. That's a very fun technology because it's got print in mind. So any vector art you make, you can print out as well. And it's always nice to have like a physical version of what you're working on. It's nice to actually create some art, print it out, and maybe remix it. And obviously, you know, it's easier for people to understand if you hand them over like a physical printout of your artwork rather than show them on the screen. I think it's, you know, it's just a more tangible kind of like connection to what you've made. But also FreeJS, that's one of my favorite toolkits to use because it allows me to create 3D artwork very fast. And it's an incredible library. So hopefully those technologies should give people enough to use at their disposal.
That's awesome. Those are all great resources. So we'll be sure to include that in the show notes so other folks can check them out. Emily, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us today. It was amazing to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. Pleasure.
Well, that's a wrap. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Tech Plus Art podcast. We're a very small team behind this project, so we greatly appreciate all your support. If you love our content and these podcasts, consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts and sharing it with a friend or two. This really does go a long way in helping us get discovered and reach more creators. As always, you can find us online at maketechart.com and at maketechart everywhere else. See you soon.